Welcome to the Terrible Podcast with your hosts from 970 ESPN and Steelers Nation Radio, David Todd, and from SteelersDepot.com, Dave Bryan. Just a couple of Daves chilling, talking Steelers. Now, here's Dave and Dave.
Welcome to the Terrible Podcast with Dave and Dave. He's Dave Bryan at SteelersDepot.com, place to get your latest and greatest Steelers information. And I'm David Todd. That's all I got. I'm just David Todd. It is Season 8, Dave. Season 8, Episode 1. And let me just say a couple things here as we get started. One is Dave's father passed this past week, a week ago. And he was down in Florida. Dave, thoughts are with you. You have one of the things that one of my favorite sports stories is you telling the story about how you became a Steeler fan. It's because you didn't like the old man all the time, and he was a Cowboy fan, and you wanted to root against him and against the Cowboys, and he became a Steeler fan. And I know he was a very influential person in your life. You've got good stories, and you've shared some funny stories. But, you know, you lose a parent, and you were great to me when I lost my dad a couple years ago. And I know it's obviously a tough time for your mom. Just I know I speak for Alex. I speak for the people who work for you, the rest of the crew. And I know I speak for our listeners in thoughts with your mother and with you. And I know it is a tough time.
Yeah, I certainly do appreciate it. I had a quick trip, left Friday, went back to Florida, and boy, humidity and heat. Humidity, heat, and rain. That's all that happened back in Florida there. But, yeah, I had a nice funeral. My dad, Roman Catholic, strict Roman Catholic at that. So, kind of an older, traditional Roman Catholic funeral there. But it was nice. Had a large turnout. Of course, my dad spent time in the military, so he had full burial rights out at Barrancas National Cemetery back home in Florida there. And boy, it always gets you when they start folding up that flag and they blow the taps through the bugle there. That's really where it makes it tough to kind of keep it together there. But appreciate your thoughts there. Had a ton of people reach out to me on Twitter as well too. Cancer is really a sucky thing, and boy, it sure got my dad quick there. But now back in Vegas here, and time to move on with my life. But I certainly do appreciate it. And David, it really is great to have you back in the main chair as well too. No disrespect to Alex Cazora. He did a great job during the offseason while you're away. But I think everybody knows that, you and I have kind of a different dynamic that we built over the course of the last going on 8 years now here. So a lot of people were asking about you during your hiatus there, if you will, and certainly is glad to have you back in the main chair again.
Yeah, and just so everybody knows, a couple of things. One is my dad was a vet as well, and I've got the flag from that service in my room, just next door. And to all the vets who are veterans or active serving people, thank you for your service. It's a big deal, and I know what that was. My father didn't have that the military service like that, as all veterans do, there's a flag and a special moment.
Absolutely, absolutely. I'm glad all that's behind it, and now I'm ready to move forward with the Steelers 2017 season.
Yeah, so let's get into it. First, Alex, I imagine you're listening. You're going to be cranking away from camp starting today, and, the updates, fantastic job as always. Thanks for stepping in. Dave and I will be doing this. Look, it's my future, unclear exactly what I'm going to be doing. There's some balls in the air. I'm not sure. I don't think there are a lot of media jobs in Pittsburgh. I don't know that I'm going to be back on the radio. We'll see. But as I told Dave, I'm committed to this season. We'll be doing this Monday, Wednesday, Friday, bang, like we've done for the past 7 years. We'll do it again this season, and we'll go from there. So we're into it. Dave, they reported yesterday a whole range of topics. Let's just start with something that I know you and Alex probably haven't had a chance to bang on because it's just come up today. We've said forever. I've said, you know, as far back as 2 or 3 years ago, that I expect Mike Tomlin to be the head coach in 2020. Reports out today from various sources, Ed Bouchette, Ian Rappaport, whatever, the Steelers are going to announce an extension with Mike Tomlin. No surprise, Mike Tomlin's going to be the coach for how long?
A long time.
Yeah, exactly.
if anybody, look, the man's record, I think, so far speaks for itself since his hiring in 2007. Evidently, he had a vesting option or his win totals triggered a vesting option.
Interesting little twist that we don't hear those types of things in contracts very often, for those who missed it, basically meaning – that, you know, Mike Tomlin, if he's in his new contract, maybe 3 years ago, it said if you win 28 games in the next 3 years, it'll automatically extend for a year. So apparently something like that happened.
Yeah, absolutely. And according to Ian Rappaport, he'll now be under contract through the 2019 season. Of course, Ed Bruchette, I think, wrote earlier in the week that could have a, you know, they could probably tack another year on that, possibly keeping him under contract through 2020. I think a lot of people are expecting. I think Kevin Colbert also is only under contract through the 2018 draft. So it probably wouldn't be surprising if an extension is announced for him in the coming days as well, too. Look, I understand Mike Tomlin has his detractors. We bang on him quite a bit. David, you have personally offered your services to him, which I assume he's declined so far with clock management and challenges and whatnot. But say what you will. I mean, you know, outside of multiple Super Bowl you know, championships, the guy's been a great coach. Constantly has the Steelers, you know, outside of a couple years there at 8-8, competing for a championship. Only one team can win that every year, but the Steelers have been right there. I think there will be, however, a lot of criticism about Tomlin if they're not able to finally kick the door down this year, but say what you will about him, I think it's deserved, and I have no issue with him being the Steelers coach for the foreseeable future.
Me too. And you know, we do look. Our job is to be analysts and critique stuff, and I think in critiquing stuff, you often talk about the negative. I think Mike Tomlin's a great coach. He is a great leader. I think he's one of the – not everybody's going to agree with me, but I think he's one of the top five coaches in the NFL. Aside from Bill Belichick, there's not a guy that I would say, okay, tomorrow go hire a head coach. You can hire anybody in the world. I would hire Bill Belichick first. I might hire Mike Tomlin second, and I got no problem with that. And, yeah, look, Mike and I – you know, unfortunately, I won't be at those press conferences this year, and it's going to be a little different format. I don't think they're going to be televised live. This year, there's the broadcast is going to be on a different station, and they're going to handle it differently this coming season. But yeah, I'll miss that because I, you know, the interaction I had with Mike, well, sometimes maybe a little contentious. I think hopefully on my side, hopefully he thought it was always respectful, and I always felt I felt like he dealt with me respectfully, and listen, A+. Extend him to 2025. I've said it all along. Ben will be the quarterback, and Mike will be the head coach in 2020. We're getting closer to 2020, and you know, Ben's not going to be the quarterback in 2025, but Mike's probably going to be the head coach in 2025.
Yeah, absolutely. And you know, I would, no reason to think Kevin Colbert's going anywhere either.
Right. Okay. So, Dave, I don't know what the biggest news out of training camp was. I mean, yesterday. James Harrison comes in a fire truck. Antonio Brown comes in and rolls in a suit, in a Rolls, chauffeur-driven Rolls. Okay, that's all good fun. I mean, these guys, you know, the other 80, 85, 87 guys, 88 guys, all come in kind of under the radar mostly. Was there anything about what happened yesterday? Anything that Mike said? Anything that caught your attention that was surprising?
You know, I think, and we'll going to kind of hit these bullet points one by one here. You know, it's easy to kind of recap what happened on Thursday on reporting day. You know, in a couple bullet points here, Le'Veon Bell stays away. Alejandro Villanueva signs a 4-year, $24 million deal. Sammy Coates and Kanan Severn placed on PUP. Damian Stafford listed and placed on the did not report list. Procedural delay with Martavis Bryant. And the last thing that I have in my bullet point is cars. And you already hit that. I guess it should be cars/fire truck.
Sure, cars, trucks.
Planes, trains, and automobiles and fire trucks,
right.
If you will. But look, I think the only thing that that kind of caught me by surprise was the whole procedural delay and Kevin Colbert having to issue a statement related to Martavis Bryant and why he's not going to be allowed to practice or play any games until he gets all this cleaned up. Now, I obviously
let me ask you something.
Go ahead.
That was a surprise to me. I thought, and tell me if you thought differently. I thought Bryant was reinstated and everything was good. This all of a sudden, I don't get it. What's the deal here? It's been 18 months. You know, they had the issue. I thought this probably happened the last time I was on the podcast that, you know, okay, he's good to go. I think we talked about it. What's the deal? Why is this happening?
To me, I think this is something that Bryant and his camp have failed to do on his end. Something related to, getting a counselor, you know, drug counselor, something along those lines. That's the best I can come up with after reading Tomlin. What Colbert said in his very brief statement, which really wasn't revealing, and then based on what Tomlin said. Now, if you go back to April 25th of this year, after Bryant was reinstated, conditions for Martavis Bryant's reinstatement: he can't attend practices or play in preseason games until he's found a treating clinician. That was something that Ian Rappaport passed along on Twitter. I guess if you dig, you know, searched deep enough on Google, you could find probably a better breakdown of this. I haven't had time to do that. My guess, and then judging Didi Kinkobala asked Tomlin yesterday, saying something along the lines of, well, Bryant's camp seems to think that they'll have this cleared up within a week and he'll be back practicing. And Tomlin, of course, wouldn't comment on any of that. But to me, it sounds like Martavis Bryant didn't get something done with a treating clinician. Maybe something related to having one there in Latrobe, you know.
Now that's interesting, because that's a good point, because if he had to have somebody in Pittsburgh. Look, I mean, that would be negligence beyond, you know, just ridiculously negligent. They've had a massive period of time in Pittsburgh. But man, that's a good point. Maybe even in this short 3-week period of time, maybe there needs to be somebody that he can see in Latrobe. So that's interesting.
And that's all I have, and that's total speculation on my end. But
it's good speculation.
But you know, the thing is, he was able to practice during OTAs and mandatory minicamp, right? So, I don't know. You know, one would think that he had to get, you know, maybe a treating clinician there set up in Pittsburgh in order to do that. And then now that he's at Latrobe, maybe something, you know, off-site needs to be set up. But regardless, judging by what Mike Tomlin had to say, or the way he answered some of these questions during his press conference on Thursday, judging by kind of the innuendos that Aditi said after talking to Bryant's side, it sounds like they'll have this all wrapped up within a week time. I don't see this as a long standing problem, and quite, you know, when we have this podcast next Friday, I wouldn't be surprised if he's back practicing.
Steelers open the season in Cleveland against the Browns. Martavis going to line up on the first snap as the starting wide receiver opposite Antonio Brown?
Boy, I don't see how he doesn't, David. Either, regardless, if you go three wide, only have two wide receivers on the field, or maybe Todd Haley surprises with a four wide receiver set to open things up. Regardless, I'll be surprised if he's not on the field for the first snap. But if he's not on the field for the first snap, he's going to be playing plenty in that game.
I agree. Okay, let's get to Ali Villanueva, and I don't think. For me, and we talked about this, and I texted you last night. I think we hit this right on the head, because so Ali signs the 4-year deal, and I'm going to just speak for both of us in that I think if you're a Steeler fan, you're probably thrilled with this deal, and you have every reason to be, because when you want to talk, we don't talk about role models, and we realize guys aren't necessarily role models. You want a role model? Ali Villanueva is a pretty damn good choice as a guy to be a role model in terms of what he's done serving his country, a smart guy, a thoughtful guy, a guy who has changed positions and earned himself a career in the NFL. He was a guy who was going to make $615,000 this year. And, Dave, I had people banging at me on Twitter, like smart people, people who know what's going on, who felt like the deal he was going to sign was a $40 million deal. Well, here's the deal. If you're going to make $615,000 this year, and as you pointed out on Twitter yesterday, you can max $3.5 million next year, something along those lines. So your max earning power is basically the next 2 years, when you can't not be a Pittsburgh Steeler effectively, is $4 million. And you're signing a 4-year contract. Effectively, what the Steelers have done is paid a market rate for those next 2 years, and he gets some of that money up front. So the $24 million to me seems exactly the right number for both sides. And obviously they got to that number, but what are your thoughts on it?
Yeah, I mean, look, as you just outlined there, and I outlined and wrote about several times during the offseason, he stood to make $615,000 this year as an exclusive rights free agent. Best case scenario for him, had he not signed a new deal this year, was that he get a first round restricted tender next offseason. No guarantee he was going to get that, but I mean, there's a possibility of it. That would have paid him. Right. That would have paid him roughly $4.5 million, okay? So $4.5 million and $600,000, that's puts a max earning power of $500,000. I mean, $5
million. Right, sorry, I was a million dollar on my number. Sorry, yep, okay.
Okay, now let's go ahead and give him the benefit of the doubt that he could have earned another – almost $500,000 in those performance-based,
which he's been one of those guys who got paid a lot in the past couple of years. For those who don't remember, it's the snaps played for guys who weren't picked in the top three rounds, I think it is. So if you're a later pick or an unrestricted free agent, undrafted free agent, and you played X number of snaps, the NFL had a pool of money that they allocated accordingly based on the snaps played.
Exactly. So, I mean, let's go ahead and give him the benefit of doubt and say he could have earned almost another $1 million in that. That's probably shooting way high there. But regardless, that gives him a maximum earning power of $6 million, and that's over the course of the next 2 years on top of it there. So you can see how the Steelers had extreme leverage. And yep. and really, the only thing Villanueva had going for him was a potential possibility of him withholding his services, and we all know how that would have turned out. I mean, regardless of how he played last season, was on an upward trajectory with his play, everything that goes along with that, he wasn't going to win a standoff with the Steelers. He would have had to report to camp sooner or later, and then duck his head between his legs and go about his business there.
And so, by the way, just knowing the guy he is, he doesn't want to do that.
Oh, that had to be eating him up inside.
Killing him. He's a military guy. He's a chain of command guy. He wants to be there. We talked about this. I thought the deal would have gotten done earlier, but I was comfortable that it was going to be going to be done before camp. Now, obviously, it was done at the 11th hour, but it got done, and you know that he wanted to get a deal done.
Absolutely. So, all right, here we are. And I wrote several times. In fact, the last time I wrote about this, I think, was in early June, where I said something along the lines, you know, don't look at the value, look at the value. Something tricky wording that I use to say, look at this for what it is, and what the value really is of Villanueva and what he brings to the table as far as value. And in there, I put two projected contracts. Now, I thought, David, that the best case scenario or what Villanueva would try to angle for would be 3-year deals, because that would effectively let him take another bite of the proverbial apple quicker you know, than he would. So I had set up 3-year deals at $5 million per and 3-year deals. A 3-year deal at $7 million per, and expected it to come somewhere within that range, because I as stated several times, let's not forget that Marcus Gilbert, who is really, would you agree, Marcus Gilbert is probably the most underrated right tackle in the league right now?
Well, you know, that's an interesting thing. I think, you know, perspective on right tackles, you know, we talk about, as an example, guys who go to the Pro Bowl and they pick tackles. They don't pick right tackles. They pick tackles, and it's almost exclusively left tackles. What I think's happened, and we talk about, and we'll get into this with the Le'Veon Bell conversation. We talk about positions and what's valued and what isn't valued. I think we saw a period of time 5 years ago where everybody looked at the offensive line and just said left tackle is the pillar, the anchor, the most important position. Most quarterbacks are right-handed. It's the blind side of the line. So that is the thing. I think we've seen today that there is the hierarchy of the offensive line is much flatter. Guards were a very, very devalued position 5 years ago. And we've seen now over the last couple of years where guards are getting paid almost, not quite, but almost the money that centers and tackles are making. I think you look at the offensive line now and you say, you know what? It's not left tackles. It's the offensive line. Yeah, maybe left tackle is a little bit more important, but you got to be solid across the offensive line. And I do, yeah, I think the answer to your question is probably. But I think, you know, you can go around the league and look at some of the very good right tackles and say they probably, none of them probably get enough notoriety. But because I think the media, us, when people talk about things, we're always maybe a step behind, just a half step behind where the game is. And I think now we know who the great guards are, but we've always known who the great left tackles are. We've known who the great centers are. And I think now there is a much more of an equilibrium across the offensive line. So long answer to your short question. Yeah, I think right. But I do think there is a better understanding of, you know, left tackle, right tackle, that stuff's less important than how we perceived it 5 years ago.
Okay, and here's my mistake. I shouldn't have right or lefted him. I should have just said is Marcus Gilbert one of the most underrated tackles in the league?
Yeah, I think that's true because I do think there's still in the media an overemphasis now on left tackles. So yeah, I'm with you on that.
And where I'm going with that is just a point that I made earlier in the offseason a few times, and that's the fact that Marcus Gilbert in his latest contract averages out at $6 million a year. Now, inflation and everything that goes along with that. Now, with that said, I could not, you know, market values aside, you know, and everything that goes along with that, I just couldn't see Villanueva's new contract seriously dwarfing that of Marcus Gilbert's. And I consider $2 million more a season kind of dwarfing that, if you will. I mean, I don't know. I don't have my calculator in front of me to you know, percentage wise, but you know, $2 million more per season, $8 million.
Well, he's getting six a season, right? Four for 24.
Right. Villanueva, which is exactly what Gilbert, and I think that was the right thing to do. Now we obviously don't know the guaranteed money yet, but early reports.
What do you think it is? What do you think the signing bonus was? Six,
seven, or eight?
Yeah, so I think we're on the same page here. I think the money he's going to get this year is going to be eight, and it's whether does he have a $2 million salary and a $6 million signing bonus, a $1 million salary, a $7 million. I think that's going to be the number. He gets eight. It's going to be less than 10, more than five. you know, whatever the number is. And I'm with you. And the way, Dave, just to draw for people who understand how baseball works and guys being basically indentured servants for 3 years and making $500,000 a year, the thing about Villanueva is what the Steelers effectively did. If you think about the money that, that Dave laid out that, that he could potentially make, whether it's $5 million or so over the next 2 years, best case scenario for him, what he's going to do is he's going to get all that money up front. And what the Steelers did is they paid him roughly, maybe not totally, but they're paying him $10 million on the two out years. Now, I don't know what his actual contract numbers are going to be, but they basically said, you know, we're going to give you a lot of this money up front that you wouldn't have had up front. So you got that. That's in the bank. Maybe it's life settling money. I mean, you know, you're good. You know, he's married. I think you're set. You can go to CMU. You can go study the things you want in the offseason. You're set for life in terms of dollars now. And you're effectively giving him $10 million for the two out years, but it's going to just be distributed differently. And I think it's I do think it's a good deal for both sides. I really do.
Yeah, you could even look at this a little bit further out as well, too. You know, we talked about the first 2 years and saying maybe his maximum earning potential is $6 million in 2017 and 2018 combined. What if they had placed a franchise tag on him in order to keep him after the 2018 season? That number could be, what, $16 million, right around in there? So yep. So roughly $22 million Villanueva could earn over the next 3 years was probably going to be his ceiling. Well, the Steelers gave him 24 over four, so it's like buy 3 years, get one free. You know, yep. you can frame this however you want, Look, you can even look at it, you know, look at it as okay. Well, let's just go ahead and say Villanueva only. You know, let's go ahead and count that $615,000 and that being a 1 year, and let's go ahead and pretend that this new contract of his, instead of 4 years, is 3 years, $24 million. Well, that's still an $8 million a year average. So you could, if you really wanted to, you could frame it that way and say, well, the Steelers effectively gave Villanueva $24 million over the next 3 years. And that's at $8 million per, that's still a fair deal for both sides. So, look, this had to get done. People are saying, why in the heck do you want to do anything with Villanueva because you effectively control him over the course of the next 2 years? Well, that's true. They could have probably gotten away with doing nothing, but what kind of attitude would Villanueva have starting, going into next offseason, having started all these games and making $615,000? You know, you don't have to worry about the guy. This contract's going to be set up, David, where only the signing bonus is guaranteed. So essentially, after 2018, if you have to cut Villanueva, you can do so with very, very, very limited dead cap money related to this. So it was the right thing to do all the way around for Villanueva and the Steelers, and I'm glad it's done.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting to see how he develops as a player from here, because there's still upside for him in terms of learning technique and things he's doing. The Steelers, I mean, we've talked about the offensive potential of this team right now, and everybody wants to talk about the window closing because they look at Ben. The Le'Veon Bell situation, which we'll get into here in a second, is obviously a little bit up in the air. But this offensive line, the core of what they're doing, these guys are under contract. They've got, you know, what we assume the backup guy to the guards and the tackles in place. And they've got some depth on this line. They've got a great offensive line coach. You want to talk about a unit that you got to feel good about. This is it with these guys going forward. You know, we'll see how long Ramon Foster plays left guard, but man, you've got and there's an argument that Ramon Foster might have been the best offensive lineman they had last year. You've got five guys there. If you told me any one of those five guys made the Pro Bowl, it wouldn't surprise me this coming season. I mean, Villanueva is obviously the least likely, but it is a rock solid group with depth.
Absolutely, it is. And for people who are mad, if you're the Gerald Hawkins fans, and you know, you're concerned now, well, why the heck did they spend a draft pick on Gerald Hawkins last year if this was going to happen? Look, you keep you keep as many good players as you possibly can, and you go from there. With all due respect for Gerald Hawkins, who I think does have a bright future moving forward here, he's only played less than 50 preseason snaps in one preseason game. He's coming off of an injury. We don't know who Gerald Hawkins is right now. Worry about him winning the swing tackle job this year in training camp, and then let's go from there. And if you're worried about down the line with him, keep in mind that Marcus Gilbert, his contract, I believe, expires after the 2019 season. So, you know, there you could still get something done with Gerald Hawkins in the meantime to be either your future right or left tackle. Remember, this kid was young coming out of LSU, so he's not going to get a lot of mileage on his body over the next over the course of the next few years here. He'll be a swing guy, and if that's all he does is becomes one of the best swing tackles in the league, a fourth round draft pick is surely justification to spend on that.
Yeah, and I, you know, I'll throw it out there, and you know, I don't, maybe a little far fetched. It's not out of the realm of possibility that he's your starting left guard in 2018.
I mean, whoa, Alex Cazorra is going to hear this and take issue with that. Alex and I had some discussions about this, and this all stems kind of back to what Todd Haley said well over a year ago with one of the first kind of interviews that he gave when talking about Gerald Hawkins, that he thinks he is position flexible. Yep. And look, so far we haven't heard any reports of Gerald Hawkins lining up at guard, and we'll see what happens during training camp now that Villanueva and you know, because let's not forget that you have a guy there still in Chris Hubbard who represented himself well, I thought, at right tackle last year in three starts, represented himself a lot better than I thought he would in those games there. It would be nice to find out if you did have some position flexibility in Gerald Hawkins, and who knows? I mean, I know you kind of throw that out there, but I've kind of thrown that out there as well, too. I'm not sure I believe it's ultimately going to happen, but who's to say right now at this stage that maybe he doesn't have a little bit more, you know, position flexibility. But regardless,
and if the line stays healthy this year, it will be interesting. You know, if I'm Mike Munchak and he's not pressed into duty, and you have a season now where, you know, let's say he's, you know, obviously on the IR last year, as people understand, you're not allowed to practice with the team when you're on the IR. You can go to meetings and things like that, but you can't practice. So it'll be interesting to see over the course of the year, if he's not pressed into duty, whether he gets reps at both guard and tackle, to see how that plays out.
Right, and make no mistake, B.J. Finney is your top
interior guy.
Right, interior guy right now. But, you know, Mike Tomlin and all these guys, you know, the coaching staff in Pittsburgh forever pressed position flexibility. For Christ's sakes, Chris Hubbard has unfortunately taken snaps, I think, in all five positions. Kelvin Beachum, who would have ever thought when Kelvin Beachum was drafted in the seventh round, he'd end up playing as many spots as he
started
did
at center against Seattle, right?
Right, even played some at center. Now, look, you obviously don't want if you're a jack of all trades, sometimes it might mean you're a master of none. But, you know, it is good to have to go into the game knowing that all I have to do is dress seven offensive linemen, and boy, I sure can withstand a lot of different things that happen during the game there. So, yeah, I mean, you can bet your sweet bottom that I'm going to be asking Alex Cazorra quite a bit. Did Gerald Hawkins get any guard snaps?
So, 46 guys get hats against the Browns. Gerald Hawkins, one of them?
No, I don't think so, David. I you know, assuming Chris Hubbard,
Finney and Hubbard are the two guys.
Yeah, if I had to guess right now, I would think that Hubbard makes it and Finney makes it, and I would think that those would be your two. Now, injuries, of course, can play a role in this, and heck, you might even be forced to dress nine offensive linemen just because
eight,
you don't have. No, I'm saying you might have to be forced to dress nine. Eight. If you know, you don't have enough guys to wear helmets because of injuries or whatnot elsewhere. But yeah, I think there's, I like the chances of Hawkins being one of your inactives right now. Now look, he could have a great camp and he could make Chris Hubbard in that $1.8 million tender of his expendable. But as I just said a little while ago, Hubbard really impressed me with his play at right tackle last year. And plus, let's not forget, he gave you a lot of snaps as an extra tight end.
Yep.
On that offensive line as well too. So I would bet, as we sit here right now at the opening of training camp, that I think Hawkins makes the 53-man roster, but I think he's one of your inactives at Cleveland.
Very interesting, because we've seen the Steelers, even in weeks when it was somebody's health was a little bit questionable, the Steelers rarely dressed eight offensive linemen. A lot of teams do. The Steelers have almost exclusively dressed seven, and with the logjam at wide receiver and some of the other situations, you know, depending on what happens at running back with, you know, are you going to keep three? Are you going to keep four? What's the deal? I would be surprised if they ever did that. So I'm with you. I agree that Hawkins is obviously going to make the team if he's healthy, and he probably is inactive. But that Chris Hubbard and the contract stuff is an interesting aspect of that. You know, the whole tight end thing, of, you know, how many are you going to dress? How many guys are – you know, what are you going to do when you go jumbo, when you go large package? Who are going to be the guys who come in that situation? Because the Steelers don't have that tight end, that blocking tight end that would be ideal to put in there. And Hubbard, as you pointed out, did a very good job in those roles last year. Le'Veon Bell, level of concern or the level of importance in your mind on a scale of 1 to 10 that Le'Veon Bell isn't there? And I'll volunteer it first. To me, it's a non-issue. Look, I know you have a team, you'd like everything to be perfect, everybody be there for, you know, for the camaraderie, for whatever. To me, Dave, this is almost a non-factor. And if he's not there for 2.5 weeks, it's almost to me, he'd be there. He'd be standing on the sideline. He's not going to get reps. He's not going to do anything. He's not going to carry the ball in the preseason. They're going to work the hell out of him when the season starts. But I understand why everybody wants to talk about it, but it's a non-factor for me.
Yeah, I mean, I'm less concerned about the first 2 weeks of camp than I am the second two. I will be more concerned if he has not reported after the second preseason game, because quite honestly, I'd like to make sure he gets in. Even though they'll break camp, it'll be back at the Southside facility. I won't hold any grudges if he misses all of the dorm life there at St. Vincent College. But boy, I sure would like him there for the final couple of weeks to get not only to prove that he understands, you know, any changes that have happened in the offense. I'd like to see him get bounced around a little bit in practice, and I'd like to see him get maybe 5 total carries in the final 2 preseason games. Now, with all that said, is it a big deal if he comes wandering in 5 days before the start of the regular season? I mean, the obvious answer to that question would be, well, you know, as long as he's healthy and he doesn't get hurt right out of the chute and is able to handle 25 to 30 touches, I'm fine with it. But I don't think training on your own is the same as training with the team in a training camp environment.
Okay, fair enough. I think Le'Veon Bell can, you know, like I said, you'd rather have him there than not there. I think he can walk in the day before the season starts and carry the ball 25 times and be no worse off because of it. It'll be interesting to see where it goes. Again, like you, I don't have an issue with him not being around. The the environment, the training camp. I think you're right. I think he probably shows up when they go back to Pittsburgh. You know, week number three, he in one of the games he carries the ball three times or one time or who even knows. I'm trying to remember how many touches he had. I remember last year when the Steelers first team offense played that series. I feel like they threw the ball every time. They didn't run the ball once. And I don't know that Bell may have caught a pass, but I'm not sure he touched the ball. I'm trying to remember how many touches he had last preseason. But, you just get him to the regular season. It's fine. I do think, Dave, and I'm sure you and Alex have talked about this extensively, so I'll just give my thought on it, is he's making $12.1 million this year. Obviously, the Steelers can franchise him next year at $14 or $15 million, whatever the number is going to be. Dave, if he has a good season, let's guess this, because we had a lot of fun last year talking about, you know, what was going to happen with Timmons, what was going to happen with Jarvis Jones, what was going to happen with some of these guys, Shazier. Do you expect Le'Veon Bell to be the Steelers' starting running back in 2018?
You know, they're not going to have a choice but to put the franchise tag on him if he has a
1,800 total yards.
Right, because there's no way he's going to sign a new deal, I don't think,
I agree. If he turned down this deal, they're not offering him a better deal than the one they offered him.
Right. So, the only reason he would think about signing is because he had a down year and missed some games or something like that. And at that point, you're wondering, well, how much drop off, how injury prone is he? Do we really want to re-sign him? So I think the only way that he is retained during the offseason is to put a franchise tag on him. But boy, and then we see now the issues the team had trying to hey, remember that conversation way back, and I said regardless of the position, the starting point with players with franchise tags on him is the amount of the franchise tag.
Yep.
And now I ended up backpedaling off of that the closer we got to saying, okay, well, maybe $10.5 million, $10 million is maybe more.
Yeah, I said 4 and 40 was where I was all the time.
Now, let's use this. Let's put this in our memory bank, regardless of market value or whatever. Once you tell a player, once you put a franchise tag play on a player, you told that player that's how much he's worth, average yearly value. That's what he's going to expect in a long-term deal. Now, if you believe the numbers, the Steelers offered him a deal.
Pretty damn close.
Probably slightly higher than that franchise tag number. Now obviously the guaranteed money, probably only a signing bonus of $18 million, yada yada, we'd beat that horse.
Let's assume the guaranteed money was 20 to 25. It was with the first year contract as well, so he'd get a lot of money up front. He turned down a good deal. Well, okay, so go ahead. So finish your thought, and I'll ask you another question.
Right. I guess your thought is he going to be your starting running back in 2018?
Man, I don't think so.
$14.5 million, David. That's yeah. He might play like two positions in one number one running back and number two wide receiver. Man, that's a lot of money, man. And now you already got Alejandro Villanueva on a deal. It's only a matter of time before you're gonna have
Stephon Tuitt
on a new deal. A year from now, we're going to be talking about Ryan Shazier, a new deal. Man.
My guess is no. I'll say no.
My guess is no right now, too. I mean,
I'm with you. I don't think Le'Veon Bell will now ever sign a contract with the Steelers. He will be franchised or he's gone. There's no long-term deal coming. He didn't sign it this year. That means he wants to go get the money, which is absolutely his prerogative. He's betting on himself. Joe Flacco bet on himself and made himself a mint. He won the Super Bowl, and it turned it into, $100 million. Le'Veon Bell's betting on himself, and obviously we hope he has a great season. But I don't see the Steelers, even if he's the league MVP – I'm not sure. Okay, he's the league MVP. The Steelers probably franchise him at 14.5, but I'm guessing He turned down that deal. He's never signing with the Steelers. So it's just a question of whether they decide they want to franchise him at $14.5 million.
Okay, now here's the counter argument, or argument to that. The Steelers were just now prepared to pay him $30 million over the course of the next 2 years. So right.
So why not franchise him?
Right. So why not pay him nearly 27 over the course of 2 years? It sounds like you got a discount.
Yeah. You know. And look, I'll say this. Look, that's the interesting question, is whether they're going to franchise him. Obviously, the Steelers are going to get 16, hopefully plus games to evaluate that decision, and they'll make it. If you made me guess today, I would guess no. But it wouldn't surprise me. I'm guessing no, 51-49, no, but not 90-10, no.
Look, you don't make the decision to tag him and keep him on a 1 year deal based solely because his cap number would be 14.54 whatever million, because you massage the cap however you need to. You keep good players. However you need to keep good players. So the counter argument, I can hear our listeners right now saying, well, they're just going to be prepared. You know, how does it matter how you eat the elephant, you know, at this point? And they would be right in that. But boy, my biggest fear, David, is he already has what, 900 something total touches underneath his belt right now. He's going to have another 350 touches in.
So let's play that game. We'll assume, let's assume he plays 15 games because the Steelers clinch a berth or whatever and misses one for injury. So he plays 15 games. If he 30 touches a game would be obviously 450 touches. So let me give you a number. 380 touches over under on the season, obviously touches, receiving and rushing. 380 touches, what do you got, over under?
Well, I'm going to take the under. I think with James Conner there, you can able to get him in the game in some situations. I think because of the fact that hopefully he only has to play in 15 games. Instead of 16 is another thing going for him. I think there's going to be some games that you're able to throw the football a little bit more to other people just because Le'Veon Bell is on the field. I'm going to take the number. I'm going to say just under that number that he comes in somewhere around 350 to 360 total touches.
Yeah, I'll pin it on 380 and say that's my guess for how many touches he has this year. So somebody wants to keep track of the things we're yapping about today and throughout the year. Make note of that. 380 touches for Le'Veon Bell as kind of a yardstick to see where things go.
What are you more worried about him after this season? Let's say he gets the 380 touches. Let's say he puts up anywhere between this kid can easily put up 2,500 total yards from scrimmage. Is it likely to happen? Probably not, but he can. He certainly can do it if he has the touches. But let's say he puts up 2,000 total yards from scrimmage. Let's say he touches the football 360 total times or slightly more, up to 380, right around there. Well, if you're not worried about the tread and you're not worried about the cap number, then he should be.
You slap the tag on him, right?
Right. Slap the tag on it and then get one more.
Give it to him 400 next year. Right.
Right.
Exactly.
Exactly. And then you know what you do in 2000 and what year are we in? 2019. You're not going to slap a quarterback tag on him 3 years in a row. So at that point, you let him walk off into the sunset and you get a third round compensatory pick for him.
What round do the Steelers draft a running back next year?
Well, I would have. Oh, Lord. After round
top three rounds? Top three
no,
rounds?
No, after round three, I think. You know what? Joe Corey, of all the things Joe Corey wrote during the offseason, his view on running backs was you don't sign them to lucrative long-term deals and you don't draft one in the first round. And really, I agree with that. Now, what is James Conner? The fact of the matter is we don't really know in the NFL. Well, we know
he is. It's going to be fascinating to see. So James Conner, okay, 16 game season. James Conner. So you get 100 touches this year.
Let's see, 16 times 5 is 80. I'll take the over. I'll take the over. I don't know why, but I'll take the over. 100 over.
Okay,
over,
I'll take under on Conner. I'm gonna be, look, everybody in the world, we've talked about this. I've talked about it a ton on my radio show. There's not a better human being on the planet than James Conner. How about the fact that he's leading the league in jersey sales, Dave? How stunning is that?
I'm not shocked at all. I mean, this guy was a cult hero of sorts coming out of the University of Pittsburgh, and let alone it is in Pittsburgh that he played his college football. He gets drafted by his hometown team. I think you could see this coming right out of shoot. So,
but leading the league.
Yeah, but that is Dick's Sporting Goods, right?
I mean, yeah, okay, fair enough, good point.
And isn't, I mean, doesn't Dick's have a strong presence, kind of, correct me if I'm wrong.
More well, headquartered here, yeah.
Right, so I don't know. But I'm not surprised it's up there regardless of the numbers. But let me ask you, Alex and I beat this to death, but I want to get your take on it. If you're knowing the numbers that you think you know already, did Le'Veon Bell make a mistake, and will Le'Veon Bell earn more than $42 million over the course of the next 3 years?
So I think it's a fascinating question, and the answer, the short answer for me is he didn't make a mistake. He took a risk for sure, but he didn't make a mistake. And do I think somebody's going to pay him $15 million a year? No, but I think somebody will guarantee him money that he wouldn't have gotten guaranteed, but he's got to get through this season. The risk is he's taking a one season risk where, you know, okay, maybe the Steelers slap the tag on him and that again defers his payday. So it's not going to cost him anything. If that's what happens, that doesn't cost him anything, but it again defers his payday. I don't think he made a mistake. I think he's taking a risk. The argument I would make is I'm surprised he didn't sign the contract because the difference in the risk reward isn't that big. I mean, there's going to be if he was the league MVP and whatever and he had signed the contract, he would have left some money on the table for sure. But we're not talking about, oh, he's going to make and on the term of the contract, oh, he's going to make an extra $40 million. We're talking about $10 million over a $40 million number or $50 million number. I don't think, for me, that risk reward, maybe I wouldn't have done. That's how I looked at it.
Well, let's face it this way. Barring something weird really happening and probably something weird on his end, Le'Veon Bell was going to see that $30 million. It might not have been fully guaranteed, but he was going to get that first $30 million over the next 2 years. Now, you could debate what may or may not happen through the third year in that $42 million, but in all honesty, the Steelers have such a high rate of paying out large percentages of high-dollar contracts. He was probably going to get $42 million. He's probably going to see that $42 million, barring him not smoking, you know, smoking any weed or whatnot, you know. So, he's talked about wanting to be a Pittsburgh. I don't know.
Yeah, that stuff. I don't pay attention to that stuff.
How much different is $50 million than $42 million?
Right, and that's exactly my point. I
can't wrap my head around that question in order to answer it. But to me, $50 million doesn't seem that much more than $42 million. Of course, I could be wrong.
Yeah, no, look, that's where I am too. Look, I don't think he made a mistake, but the risk reward probably didn't skew the way he wants. Now, he can say he's trying to reset the market for running, like all these other things that maybe he puts value on something like that. That, you know, most of us don't really put value on. We're just looking at the straight dollar sign. So, I was surprised the way I said it when it happened. I was surprised he didn't sign it. The risk reward factor for him, I don't think it's skewed makes a lot of sense for him to have not signed it. But I don't think Le'Veon Bell as a Steeler in 2019. I mean, I'm pretty solid, you know, feel pretty strongly about that. And I would, and I said, as I said, kind of maybe slightly bet against it in 2018.
Okay, now enough. We'll have plenty more time to talk about Le'Veon Bell moving forward and when he reports. We'll see. We got a couple other housekeeping things we need to hit on real quick here. The PUP list.
Sammy Coates out of nowhere.
Here's the good news about the short PUP list that includes Sammy Coates and Kanan Severin. It's short. We had guys like Stephon Tuitt and Sean Davis miss some time during the offseason program as they were recovering from offseason surgeries. The fact that there's only two guys on this PUP list to start training camp and really one meaningful guy, all apologies to Kanan Severin fans and Sammy Coates, is really, really impressive. Now, someone joked, I forget where I read it, saying that when the Steelers when the Steelers showed up at training camp yesterday with all those cars, it would have been impressive if Sammy Coates showed up in an ambulance. Now that's not nice, but I understand where is that not funny or what?
Yeah, that's funny.
Because of obviously Sammy Coates, a tremendous start to the 2016 season. First five games, and then basically injuries, you know, to his hand and to, I think, quad or whatnot.
Sammy Coates' dress against the Browns opener.
Oh, man. At this point, I put him on my 53-man roster prediction, David. But him starting off, not getting a good start to camp here. And let's face it, this guy was a one-trick pony regardless. I'm going to go against my own 53-man roster prediction I just released a few days ago, and I'm going to say no. Sammy Coates is not in Cleveland.
On the 46 or on the 53?
I'm saying he's not on the 53 right now. I'm concerned.
Yeah, that's fair. I think he will be, but you know, this receiver logjam. The way the last 12 games went. And, you know, this and the other stuff, you know, he's a guy who doesn't need to have problems coming into camp. And obviously he does.
Who do you want right now based on their body of work? No, leave out the injuries and all right now of what I have based on their current body of NFL work. Who would you rather have, Justin Hunter or Sammy Coates?
I'm going to take Sammy Coates just because I see the higher ceiling. I feel like that little taste we got, that four or five game stretch to start the season, was tantalizing enough. The Denver playoff game, you know, those couple catches he had in that game, that I feel like it's there, but man, it's got a lot of Lima Sweet in it right now.
Yeah, and the only other thing we brought up several times during the offseason is at least Coates did show you something on special teams last year when he wasn't functioning well.
Yeah, which was into, again, I go back to the guy's got bad hands and you're having him run down on special teams, but whatever. So he did. You know, he did. He made some plays on special teams for sure.
And Justin Hunter has no history of being a special teams guy. So I have a feeling that Danny Smith is going to really want to see what maybe that guy has. And then, you know, look, we have the Darius Hayward Bay in the conversation as well, too. A one-trick pony that drops footballs but does give you something on special teams. Needless to say, these wide receiver battles, assuming all these guys stay healthy moving forward, there's going to be some tremendous battles, I think, even with Bryant and Coates missing the early portion of training camp. You guys got guys like Juju Smith-Schuster. You got Eli Rogers. You got DeMarcus Ayers. You got Kobe Hamilton. It's not over until it's over with Kobe Hamilton.
Right.
You know?
Right.
So even though I don't think there's a soul listening to this podcast that expects him to make it, look, this kid wasn't even in training camp at the same time last year, and he ends up being a contributor, you know, over halfway through the season last year. So That's going to be one of the good battles right there. Back to the injuries and all. Good news on that front. Here's an important thing for everybody to remember. You have to be on the active PUP list in order to qualify for the reserve PUP list come the start of the regular season. Right. So anybody that practices on Friday that's under contract, if they practice on Friday, they are not eligible for the in-season PUP list. Now, once Coates and Kane and Severn come off the PUP list, which we think they will in the coming weeks, they are no longer eligible for reserve PUP list. So, if the moment somebody gets injured during training camp, and God help us, it's going to happen, don't tweet me and say, well, we can just put him on PUP, because that is not eligible at that point. So important piece of news that I always try to, or a key element I try to reemphasize every year at this time. What else do we have to talk about? Damian Stafford, did he take the wrong turn at Albuquerque?
he no-showed?
He no-showed, did not report. This is the former Tennessee Titan safety signed several weeks ago, a guy that, you know, I think most of us thought was going to have a good chance at competing, well, you know, maybe for a fourth and final safety spot, a good special teams player. He was placed on the did not report list by the Steelers on Thursday. We'll see what happens moving forward. Remember, Damian Stafford, before he signed with the Steelers, was told, hey, you need to drop a little bit of weight. Do that and come back and see us. I wonder if he mixed in a little bit too much fast food during the off season, got a little fat, and said, I'm not sure I should report because I'm not going to make
not going to look good.
Yeah, I'm going to miss my way in there. But really, really strange. I don't think anybody expected that. We'll see if he reports here in the coming days. But in the meantime, it was announced by an agent on Friday morning that the Steelers have a new safety in town, and it's the Golden kid out of Penn State there. So undrafted free agent. So you know that's going to be your newest body in training camp as of Friday. He, of course, played safety at Penn State. Did most of his work in the box. He's going to need some work on his tackling. But heck, who name a safety in safety on the Steelers right now who doesn't need work on his tackling? Malik Golden should be your newest Steeler, and that should be announced later on today. And have we missed anything? I think we did. I think we hit all those main bullet points.
Yeah, well, I got to run to a lunch, but Ben apparently had 4 one-on-one interviews today, and Ed Bouchette's tweeting out that, again, citing family and age among reasons why he could retire. Dave, on Monday, we'll get into, you know, Alex will be given training camp reports, but we'll get into the CTE study that came out this week, and John Urschel, the lineman from Penn State who retired, was battling for the starting center job for the Ravens, largely due to this study, the implications of that. And we'll talk about some other stuff as we move along. But man, it's great to be back. Fun to be talking with you, and yeah, we'll get after it Monday.
Yeah, it's like riding a bike, with you. Step right in. Glad to have you back as well, too. I know the listeners are glad as well, David. Folks, in the meantime, you can follow me on Twitter, at Steelers Depot. You can follow David Todd on Twitter, at David M. Todd. Tweet David M. Todd and welcome him back, and tell him that the show sucked horribly without him, and that he should never take that long of absence ever again. That's at David M. Todd. My buddy Alex Cazor, at Alex_Cazor, he'll be filing training camp reports all throughout the remainder of the session here while the team is at La Trobe. He'll be joining me nightly for recaps as well, too. If you want to email the show, theterriblepodcast@gmail.com. If you want to donate, go to SteelersDepot.com, hit that donate button, upper right navigational bar. Dave, once again, I really am glad to have you back, and look forward to our eighth season together.
Yeah, good stuff. As always, thanks for listening to The Terrible Podcast with Dave and Dave.